providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
And for more KER politics than the last half of the show, we are featuring a very, very interesting guest. His name is Abdul Jamal Hassan. Mr. Hassan was born in 1986 in the Zermatt district of Afghanistan, southeastern Paquita province. He's got a degree in poli-sci, political science, from the Kabul University, and before serving with the coalition forces, which he did from 2008 until 2012, he worked as an English as a second language area supervisor. He has just published a book entitled Promises Betrayed, and in the foreword of this book was written by General David Petraeus. Very important book because it gives what we feel is a very accurate description of the American withdrawal from that region. Jimmy, you want to start out?
Yeah, so again, it's an honor, Jamal, to talk to you and make sure that everybody out there knows that your book is available on Amazon and easily ordered, Promise Betrayed, an Afghan interpreter at the fall of Kabul. And I think, I guess I need to start out with this. Just give us a brief, you know, summary of the challenges you personally and your family faced as things began to collapse, beginning in that spring and up until the August withdrawal.
I was working until July the 15th of 2021 at the NATO's headquarters in Kabul. And then I was released because the mission ended, and I spent 1 month preparing for my SIV interview at the U.S. Embassy, which was due on the 30th of August last year. And then on the 15th of August, I was at home supervising a group of painters painting a room for my brother's wedding, which was also due in 2 weeks' time. And then I got a call from my brother-in-law saying that I shouldn't leave the home because there were Taliban everywhere, which wasn't something I could believe because there were thousands of Afghan forces in Kabul plus foreign forces, and there was this agreement that the Taliban would not enter Kabul city until a power sharing government was established. But then things started to fall apart quickly, and when I turned on the TV, there were Taliban everywhere. When I opened the window of the balcony to see outside, there was smoke rising from the U.S. Embassy and the NATO's headquarters, which brought me to think that they were burning some sensitive materials. And there were Chinook helicopters flying over Kabul city trying to evacuate people from different embassies and bases to the Kabul International Airport, which was the final outpost for the international community there. And then for 3 days, my family did not allow me to leave home because there were Taliban everywhere. And then on the fourth day, August the 18th, I got a text from a friend in Italy about an evacuation by the Italians, with whom I had worked from 2008 to 2010. I grabbed my family, my wife, my two-year-old daughter, and we ran to the airport, only to find out that the evacuation by the Italians was canceled for 3 days. And then I was left with the two choices, either to leave, go back home, or stay there and try my best to get onto the airport. Luckily, the following day at 1 o'clock in the morning, I mean midnight, I showed my SIV documents to the U.S. Marines. They allowed me inside and with my family, but then the real chaos started from there. For 36 hours, me and my family were at the Kabul airport with thousands of people. Absolute chaos, a scene I will never forget in my life. And for 13 hours, I was separated from my wife and my daughter, and no one can imagine what would have happened to them. My wife thought that I was killed amid the chaos. I was trampled, and so many other thoughts went through her mind. And then from there, we were evacuated to Qatar, to Al Udeid Air Base, and we had to stay for 7 straight hours under 50 degrees Celsius on the tarmac, because there were no buses to evacuate us to the places where we had to be taken. And then at every 30 minutes, an Afghan evacuee was fainting out. And then there was ambulance taking them, and I was translating for the 450 people on a C-17. I was the unofficial interpreter for that leg of the journey. And then from there, we were taken to Germany for a week. We were there under very harsh conditions, cold weather, raining, and no proper food, no proper accommodation, no blankets. It was a terrible experience. And then we were taken to Virginia. From there, we were taken to the U.S. Army base Fort McCoy at Wisconsin, where we spent 65 days. And basically, since the moment we entered the U.S. Treasury, our luggages, our bags, clothes, everything, our belongings, our documents, they were separated from us, and we got them back after 6 months.
Well, I'm curious about one thing. Now, your book basically tells the real story of America's war on terror in Afghanistan and how the current administration's actions have really failed not only America, but our allies, and most of all the freedom-loving Afghani allies who were left behind. Tell us a little bit about that, would you?
Yeah, so as you said, there are plenty of details about the failure either in the military part or in the civilian part by the international community in my books with plenty of detail. So the things that started to fall apart for the military was starting with an announcement by President Obama in 2010. When he said that we will end the combat mission in 2014, which gave a kind of incentive for the Taliban to wait out the foreign forces, which they did. And then when the Afghan forces took full responsibility for security in Afghanistan, the Taliban attacked them fiercely and incurred lots of casualties on the Afghan side. And then when the Doha Agreement was signed initially under President Trump, things were a little bit on the right path, because under President Trump, the withdrawal would have been a condition-based, meaning that if the Taliban stopped attacking foreign and Afghan forces, if they preserved, protected, and respected human rights and the gains of the past 20 years, the international forces will withdraw. Otherwise, they would stay there. And also, President Trump took Taliban responsible for their actions. That is an example. In 2019, when he was supposed to meet senior Taliban leaders at Camp David, when a suicide attack killed a U.S. soldier in Kabul, and that's when he canceled the visit. So he took Taliban responsible for the actions. But unfortunately, though people say that the Doha deal, the deal between the Taliban and the U.S. was a mistake, the current administration continued with that mistake despite knowing it was a wrong deal. And unfortunately, when the U.S. delivered all parts of its promises made to the Taliban, the most important of which was the release of 5,000 Taliban prisoners from Afghan jails, the U.S. decided to leave overnight and did not take Taliban responsible for their part of the promises. They should not have attacked Afghan forces. They should not have run over provinces and districts, and certainly they shouldn't have entered Kabul city. None of Taliban were not taken accountable for none of these actions.
You know, Jamil, the impression, we've got less than a minute here, and then we'll be able to continue on in our final segment. But the impression and the argument that the current administration, I call the regime here in Washington, they argue that they got into a bad deal and they were stuck with it. But as you had pointed out, I think very appropriately, both serving there and serving when the initial discussions kicked off in the Persian Gulf area, in UAE and Qatar, that it was very much conditions-based. And the Trump administration was actually holding people fairly tightly to those issues. And, of course, the commander on the ground at RS, General Scott Miller, he was doing the same. And we're going to have to go to a break here. And we've got about just a few seconds left. And we'll come back with Jamal Hassan, Promises Betrayed, discussing Afghanistan withdrawal.